You're listening to episode 2.51 of the Midlife Improvement Project, and on this week's episode, I'm chatting with Ali Shapiro, a holistic nutritionist and amazing human who is going to help you to get psychologically flexible in order to achieve sustainable change in your health and wellness habits. Let's go. Welcome to the Midlife Improvement Project, a podcast about what really matters as you negotiate midlife. Some might call this time of life a crisis, but I want to introduce you to the idea that it's an awakening. This is a time to listen to your soul, to find your purpose, to reflect on what you really want to do and be in the days you have left here on planet Earth, and then write your own midlife manifesto. You are not less of yourself on the other side of midlife. You are more. I am your midlife wake-up coach, Dr. Peggy Malone. I'm a healthcare provider turned life coach who helps women in midlife lean into the magic of being a woman as we head into the second half. I help you to decide where you want to go next with this one precious life and really claim all of your big dreams and goals while caring less about what anyone else thinks about it. After all, if someone is going to be unhappy with your life, it shouldn't be you. In 2023, I reached the milestone of turning 50, and I want to use this podcast as my midlife manifesto. There will be no fading into the background and quietly living out my golden years with the assumption that my best years are behind me over here. I'm just getting started. I invite you to come with me. Listen in each week as I help you to wake up to what's possible for you in midlife as you learn to increase your self-awareness and your confidence, get curious about what got you here, and get clear about where you want to go next on the way to being an even better you. Let's get after it. Ali Shapiro is a holistic nutritionist and a rebel with a serious cause. She's academically, practically, and empathetically aware of how the medical system, diet culture, and body positivity movements all have their own flavor of crazy. Ali developed Truce while in graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania, where she drew from her 17 plus years of working with real life clients and her own personal healing journey from emotional eating and having cancer as a teenager. Ali's work and clients' unique success has been featured in Well Plus, Good, Mind Body Green, Prevention, Women's Health, and Forbes, as well as industry-leading podcasts Being Boss, Tell Me Something True, and Food Heaven. Well, hello, friends. Today, we are going to talk about getting flexible. Now, you might think we're talking about stretching your muscles, and even though, yes, that is important, you should definitely move your body today, I'm talking about getting flexible in your mind. My guest today is going to help us to be more psychologically flexible as we approach changing and maintaining our health habits. Let's do this. Ali, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Peggy.
All right. As you are aware, this is called the Midlife Improvement Project. And so I would love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, your story, and especially your midlife story.
Yeah. I'm in it right now, but I think I'm through at least the physical thick of it. So I'll start with basically 3 years ago. So 3 years ago, I had this really bad heel pain, but it was the pandemic. I was 42, just turned 42 years old, and I had a newborn. I had a baby at 41. And I originally was told that I was infertile because I had cancer as a child, and they told me I was in early menopause and that I couldn't get pregnant. And so I worked with a naturopath and an acupuncturist and got pregnant. And so I assumed that everything they told me was incorrect, not realizing that I was still in perimenopause and that you can get pregnant in perimenopause. But I was having this horrible heel pain. And so I went to the doctor, and you know, the nurse was like, "Okay, honey, come step on the scale." And I had really battled my weight and emotional eating, binging, had a ton of health problems in my 20s as a result of the chemo. But I had reversed all of that through functional medicine and working through the deeper emotional reasons that we turn to food. So I was feeling pretty chill about my weight because I wasn't emotionally eating. I wasn't binging. My son, I was walking him all the time because that was the only thing to do in a pandemic. In fact, two people in our neighborhood were like, "This is the most walked baby we've ever seen, you know, in our lives." And I was like, "I'm chill." And the scale registered 30 pounds above my pre-pregnancy weight. And I was like, and I ate really healthy in pregnancy. I did not like eat for two, as they say. And so I was like, what is going on? And I had developed this process called Truce with Food that in essence helps us really detach our worth from our weight by helping us realize how food can be medicine. So we don't view it just as calories, but also the emotional reasons that we turn to it. And so I was like shocked, but I didn't spiral in shame because I had done all of that work. But I was really curious because I was like, what is happening? I was eventually diagnosed with plantar fasciitis. And that was piling on with, I was having really bad insomnia. I was also had really low immunity. I used to never get sick and I had a really bad virus. I was like, was it COVID? But I didn't have the COVID antibodies. Then we did get COVID in January of that year. But I was just getting sick in ways that were really weird. I was having joint pain. I tried to start working out again and I seemed to injure myself all of the time. But I didn't have hot flashes. So I was like, this isn't perimenopause, you know, because that's all I thought it was. So long story short, I started putting the pieces together and realized that, okay, all of this is connected to perimenopause. I went, you know, I've been menopausal now for about a year and a half, but realizing that I had to shift my nutrition. I hadn't tracked my food in 15 years and realized I thought I was eating more protein than I was, but I wasn't. I had to start strength training. And then there were just a lot of those bigger midlife questions that I think all of us ask of like, what am I doing with my life? Like motherhood, again, there was this complicated of it. It was like a miracle we had my son, but it was so much harder than I thought it would be. And part of it was because I was going through menopause at the same time. And my work, you know, I've been doing my work now for 16 years. And I was like, this is great. This is what I always wanted, but what's next? So it was, I know I just shared a lot, but I was like hit with a 4x4, you know, like menopause, postpartum, and really being shocked that as someone who, my clients always tell me the breadth and depth of my knowledge and the integrative knowledge of our physical and psychology and physiology is so wide and deep, but I had no idea about all of these midlife changes. Like it still shocks me that I did not know how much our hormones influence us.
Oh, you know what's crazy about this is that so I've been working as a healthcare provider for 20 years, and I had patients all through my career that were in their 40s and 50s and were telling me about certain symptoms. And I was like, oh, okay. And I did what I do in terms of giving them treatment based on what I knew. And then as soon as I started to come in, I was like, oh, what is happening? I feel so terrible that I did not have this knowledge that my brain has now that I can go back and tell her to help these women that were going through it then. So all of my patients who are in this age range now are benefiting from me learning all of this stuff about my own body now, which is great. But you're exactly right. It hit me like a, what in the heck is this? Like, no, thank you.
Yes. Yes. And I do want to say for everyone, you know, so they're like, oh, I understand. But, you know, with the right knowledge and learning to be flexible, as we're going to talk about, you know, my plantar fasciitis is gone. I've lost 20 pounds. I don't know if I'll get rid of the last 10, but I've also lost 25 pounds of fat. But I'm sleeping amazing now. And that's just a recent development. But and I'm working less, which was a big block to me getting better because I was just trying to keep a business up, trying to pandemic parent. You know, it also blew up my relationship with my husband. We had like a very great relationship. And then it was like, you're doing more, I'm doing more. You know, and it was really that was so, but you can work through it. And I think this time can be really powerful if we can be really discerning about, you know, what do we value now and how do we start making decisions from there? So it is also like, I'm loving this time now that I know what I know, but it's an adjustment period.
Well, and I think it's an adjustment period for every woman that comes into it, which is part of the reason why I want to share as much information as I can on this podcast so that they have some tools or some voices that they can listen to that can help them negotiate this time. just because as you stumble through it and figure it out, it's nicer when somebody's gone first.
Yes. And I'm so glad. And this work you're doing is so important because at least here, I know you're Canadian and there's a lot of crossover, but in America, everything is so polarized. It's like diet culture or kind of eat whatever you want. I'm putting like body positivity, intuitive eating all into those buckets of like, again, thinking that like there's only diet culture or like no boundaries on what you eat. And I think that there's a lot of the menopause books I've read, there's like no mention of diet. I mean, people are like, talk with a provider. It's almost like people don't want to approach that because of diet culture. But I feel like midlife is where like the rubber hits the road on these extremes. And you really have to find that medium because nutrition, exercise, it has to become bigger than about weight loss. But it's so important to manage your menopausal symptoms and also your long-term health. And so we need to be having these conversations so that people realize it's going to be unique. We get more individualized as we age. And though there are things that you can do so that you don't have to suffer the way that so many women are gaslit. Like, we have such a high threshold for women's pain in Western culture. It's like, you know, one of my clients told me she went to her doctor feeling anxious. This was before we started working together. And the doctor was like, well, as long as you're not suicidal, it's okay. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I'm like, people say this stuff, you know, and it's like, because I have such a different, like, I find the providers who I know can support me. So I'm like, I don't feel like I'm in that world as much. Don't get me wrong. I've had my fair share of dismissive providers, but I'm like, people are saying this in 2023,
wow.
You know,
Okay. And here's an example of why we're having this conversation. All right, cool. All right. When I started this podcast back in 2018, it was mostly about creating good habits and routines to improve my life and anyone else who was listening. And a lot of what I discussed back then fell into the category of traditional habit development advice, like all the stuff that you see when you look at habit development. And so sometimes it worked really great and sometimes it didn't. And I know that for myself, it was frustrating when it didn't. And I'm sure anyone listening might have had those same frustrations. So this is where my nerd brain would love if you would share some of the research supporting how psychological flexibility helps with these complex behavior changes instead of just relying on that traditional habit stuff.
Yeah. And I think that traditional habit stuff can like really get us started, but I don't know if it will help keep us going. And it also depends on what areas we're using for traditional habit development. So the research shows that actually with complex behavior change, which eating and exercise are, because you're doing them in different settings, they're emotionally loaded, right? As much as you and I want people to connect things to health, it was a journey for me to actually be able to connect food and exercise to health because our culture has always connected both of those things to weight loss. So what that means in terms of habit development is that they're very emotionally loaded, right? So it's not like, hey, take your thyroid medication every morning before you wake up, before you eat breakfast, right?
I can habit stack it with my coffee every morning.
Yeah. Yes. Or I brush my teeth every morning and night. Like those cues are great, you know? But when it comes to things that are more emotionally loaded and that we're doing in a bunch of different environments. So I ate last night, my sister and her husband are in town. We went out to eat, right? This morning, okay, ate breakfast at home. Tonight, we're going to a solstice party. It's like there's different stresses for people in different eating settings, right? So it's like, okay, they're just very different settings. And then the third thing around complex behavior change is what we know is the more that someone has, say, caregiving responsibilities, or the more someone's job is, you know, variable, the less control over their time and energy they have. And so the research for eating and exercise actually has not bared out that traditional habit change can really help long term because of these different factors. So does that kind of
So basically we're starting from the place of I've tried all the things and it works for a little while. And then I somehow like just go back to my baseline of what I was doing before. Like is basically these emotional, more complex behavior habit attempts always kind of bring us back to baseline for the reasons you just stated.
Exactly. Exactly. So what the research is finding now is that the goal is to be flexible. And I think a lot of my clients are, at least I love to be flexible, but I'm all or nothing, right? And I think that's the challenge. And so what we mean by flexible is basically doing what's accessible, right? Making the good enough choice with where you are that day. And that is the goal that actually leads to sustainability. You may have to extend your timeline a little bit, right? However, I think all of us know that if we show up and do good enough for a longer period of time, we're going to get further than if we wait for perfect conditions. And I think traditional habit change relies on perfect conditions. And in midlife, right, I even think about, you know, yes, I have a 4-year-old, but I had to learn to like retake care of myself, right? Like the nights I didn't get sleep, right? I mean, I had horrible insomnia, right? Or the nights that like I was just feeling really down, because your moods fluctuate. It's like we have to learn to be where we are and act from there instead of trying to stick to some perfectly prescribed plan.
There's two thoughts that come to mind when you're saying this. The first one is it's like the difference between all or nothing and all or something, which
yes,
is like
I love
a neat way to kind of package it so that people's brains can remember it. And then the second thing is that because we're so scripted to want things to always be perfect, when it's not working now how it used to work 10 years ago, then it just adds to the frustration and we just double down on it. But then we can't do it because our stress tolerance is lower and our joints hurt and I can't sleep. And then it just makes everything even crazier. So when you like couple all of these complex behaviors with midlife, it's like a giant cluster and it's really frustrating for a lot of women in particular.
It is. And I love that you brought up perfectionism, because the kind of the, I guess, more academic version of psychological flexibility is that you can feel all the emotions that come up when things aren't going your way, yet you still act from your values. And so like, for example, like when I was first starting to exercise again, I had just had a baby, I had plantar fasciitis. I couldn't just carefreely enter the gym. I had to start with a trainer, which felt like a huge setback. But I was like, okay, you're gonna be a beginner again because you value your health. And by health, I don't mean just weight. I was like, I need energy. I need alone time away from my family. I know you're not supposed to say that, but
I think that's a real thing. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. So it's having all of these feelings, but acting in alignment with your values anyways. And there's two things that I want to bring up is for many of us, like you said, when we say what's working, we're tying it back to health as defined by weight, right? So it feels like that feels like nothing's working and everything. And again, it's a process to start to really care about your health beyond weight. And that's what I do in my Truths with Food process, is help people expand that. But the other thing you said is about perfectionism. And I want to bring that up because I think that's such a key thing that we have to break up with in midlife. But I want to give people a way to think about that as part of the feelings that come up with psychological flexibility, part of the feelings that come up that make us not want to follow through on valuing our health is that imperfection, the guilt, the fear. And what I really think is under that is perfectionism isn't about underneath following the plan perfectly or cooking all the meals perfectly. It's this idea that there's no risk. Right? If I do what this person tells me, it's going to work. And it's really giving this authoritative power to somebody outside of yourself and letting them still boss you around. It's like, come on, no, we gotta be the leader of our own life. And so realizing that perfectionism is really about, oh, there's no risk here of it not working. There's no risk of being bad. And realizing that a lot of those imperfect guilt, fear, shame feelings are because you feel like you're at a bigger risk for it not working, but yet you have to work through that to actually discover what works. Does that,
I got most of it. Yes. I guess filters that is that I want it to be perfect so I can feel safe.
Yes. Yes. That it's working.
Yeah. Yeah. I can know for sure this is going to work. And if it's going to work, awesome. And if it's not, I'll just do what I'm doing because this seems okay. And I'm still here.
Yeah. The way that I describe it is like a lot of people think they know the what, but they don't know the how.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Right. So let's take my exercise journey. Right now, I am lifting weights 3 times a week. I'm doing speed interval training. But had I started out with that, I would have, there was no possible way. You know, I'm 3 years into this journey, but I had to start where I was, right? I knew I wanted to work up to this, to work up to the recommended three strength training days a week, doing some speed interval training, so that I can be healthy, right? And I did care about my weight. I did want to lose weight, but it wasn't the main, it was wrapped up with also my health and energy and moods. So if I had to start with a trainer, because if I would have started just lifting at the gym and doing speed intervals in the shape that I was in, not sleeping, stressed out, that is so unsustainable. And then I would have just been like, this isn't working. And I would have blamed myself instead of the approach.
Yeah. And then you would have ended up in a shame spiral and all of it would have been worse. Yeah.
Yeah. Like any accomplishments, I encourage anyone listening, think of any accomplishment you've had. Like it has taken steps and it has taken like what you're doing now is not the same thing that you were doing when you first started out. And you were taking on a lot of risk in the beginning. And now half of my clients are sober and they come to me after sobriety. And it's like, being sober doesn't feel like a risk anymore for some of them. But in the beginning it was like, what do I do with my hands? What if someone offers me a drink, right? It's like, and they managed all of those and they didn't expect themselves to be so carefree in the beginning, but we do that with diet and exercise. It's like, and I mean, diet is a noun, not a verb, you know.
I think probably you're getting to what I'm going to ask in this next question, but maybe this will solidify it a little bit. What are the 3 beliefs that prevent us from being psychologically flexible and falling off the wagon?
Yes, yes. So the biggest one I see is the harder I work, the more productive and successful I will be. So what happens is with food, okay, if I go to 3 different grocery stores, if I meal plan, if I think about food a lot, if I read more about it, I'm going to get better results. And the research shows no. That's the more we think about our weight and food, the worse results. And I think all of us, if you think back to a time in your life where food felt easy, you probably actually weren't thinking about it that much, right?
Okay.
And we think about that with exercise too. It's a consistent belief. The harder I work out, the more productive I am, the better the results. But that's not what happens in midlife. You got to know when you got to recover. You can't push yourself in the same way, right? If you're doing, you know, too much cardio, you're just bringing up cortisol the whole time, you know, which is then not going to make you sleep and all this stuff. So I think what people really have to start thinking about is, okay, rather than I have to work hard, how do I work smart? And that's the happy medium between doing something and doing, I loved how you said it. Now I'm forgetting, menopause break.
All or nothing. Yeah. All or nothing versus all or something.
Yes, all or something. So I always tell my clients the challenge there is that you have to learn to start to trust and rest, right? And like not focusing on the thing all the time and thinking that you have to work so hard at this. And you know, again, you know this, it's like often we're thinking about food when our blood sugar is in balance. So it's like, okay, let's get the physical stuff. Like let's put the work in now, but let's work smart about figuring out what kind of probably all my clients need more protein. Oh my God, 50% of my emotional eating and I don't think about food when I'm, my blood sugar is balanced. It's like, yes, that's an example that of how you can trust and ease, you know? So that is a rigid belief that creates all or nothing, is the harder I work, the more productive I am around this, the better the results, the more success. The second one is really around, and it's around, well, I was going to say, I love your quote. I'm kind of jumping, but I love your quote. Everything you want is on the other side of consistency. And I think sometimes when people think of consistency, they think of doing the same thing all the time. And rather than what I'll share in a minute is, this belief of if I have like absolute control, like I need to have absolute control over everything for it to work. Right. And so if I'm controlling the plan, if I get the plan and I'm doing everything perfectly, another way of saying that is if I do everything perfectly, I'm going to get the result. If I do imperfect, I'm not going to get the result. And so what I have my clients focus on here is focus on momentum. It is true that consistency matters, but you don't have to do the same thing every day. Focus on momentum. So like, we're recording this around the holidays, right? It's like, okay, no one can keep up their consistent schedule, but I'm like, I'm going to go walk, right? I'm going to keep that up so that when I get back to the gym on the 26th, I mean, I'm actually working out the whole time, but if people aren't, I've also been working at this for a while. When I get back to the gym on the 26th, it's not like I'm starting, like there's momentum there versus feeling so sluggish. And I don't know about you, Peggy, but I have found in midlife that if I don't move every day, I just get so tired and so down. And then that makes me not want to move. And the inertia and resistance gets bigger. So
definitely.
So, and like, I have a lot of clients who in non-holiday days, they're like, oh, I always bring my tennis shoes to the, you know, when I travel for work, I bring my tennis shoes to in my suitcase and I've never worn them once because I can't recreate my routine. And I'm like, well, what would, if you think about what would give you momentum there, it's like, oh, one woman was like, I need to walk first thing in the morning because I'm going to be in a conference room all day. I'm not going to see any light. And that would really help my energy. And so when you focus on momentum, you start focusing on your health instead of like the immediate like weight loss effects. So it's a really effective way to start getting out of tying everything back to weight and more to how can this nurture my health?
I love it. Just another quick example. I have a client who instead of, if there's a day where things are not gonna be perfect and they can't get in their workout, they, in between meetings, will do 10 burpees. Which by the way, like a lot of people hate burpees, but they're effective. But this person does that. And also, if you don't want to do burpees, you could do squats or you could jump up and down on the spot for 10 seconds. But just even that is the all or something instead of the all or nothing. Instead of waiting to do my hour workout at the end of the day or the beginning of the day when you're in this busy time.
And what that does too is help people make holistic connections. Like when I do those burpees or my client who does her, who's, I was like, all right, let's experiment with walking in the morning. She was like, oh my God, that gave me the energy. And then I wanted to eat a healthy breakfast. So it's like, rather than looking at, did I do this perfectly or not? It's like, how is this going to help me with like, continue to make healthier choices? Because then the healthier breakfast means she's not craving something at 9 a.m., which is then going to tank her energy, which is then going to disrupt her sleep. So I love your, you know, all in some, all or something. It's like something keeps the momentum. Mm-hmm. And I think there's one thing too that like when you really start to tie stuff back to your health, and again, I know this takes time, it's like you realize you're playing the long game. It's like, I'm doing this hopefully for 40, 50 years. So like, I got to figure out how to do this in my real life, not in perfect conditions. And I mean, this is kind of super deep, but we also then do the healthy thing of relate to ourselves in really kind and compassionate ways when we're quote unquote struggling, like when we're imperfect. And that is going to be a ripple effect that, you know, brings down cortisol, but you're just learning to be a really good friend to yourself. Oh, in those moments.
We should be a good friend to ourselves.
Right?
We're really conditioned to not be in a lot of ways, especially around some of the subject matter. So that's such a lovely thing to think about and to lean into.
Yeah. And then the third belief that tends to make people rigid is the more I sacrifice, the more I'll be rewarded. And so this tends to be, oh, the more I restrict my food, the better I'm doing, right? The more I do exercise I hate, the better the results, right? It's the whole martyr archetype. And the problem with that is restriction isn't a sustainable strategy. And it also doesn't really work, you know? And so what ends up happening is if we have anything we enjoy, we start to feel guilty, right? And then we're like, and then we eat to soothe from the guilt or the shame of the fact that we're not sacrificing. And so that creates this rigid belief that it also creates, oh, I've earned this, right? I've earned this treat, that we have to burn off calories to earn our food. And that just, that disintegrates and it, and, you know, makes our relationship to health very complicated. And so I really think the happy medium there is like, how can I learn to feel satiated and satisfied rather than restricted, which then I'm going to go overboard. But that means physically, but also again, emotionally, like how do I eventually learn to trust that good enough is enough? And that takes time, but it takes, you know, experimenting like your client with the burpees. It's like, oh, this is enough. It works for today, you know, or my client who walked, you know, it's like, oh my God, enough is enough. Like it's okay. And yeah, it made,
it's more than nothing. Let's focus on that.
Yeah. And so then when she comes back, it's like, oh, it's not this big, now I've got to deprive myself, you know, of like any sort of ease and satisfaction. It's like, oh, I'm feeling good and I want to feel better. And so it's like a complete mindset shift that ultimately all of three of these leads us to realize that health is like this really nourishing and freeing experience instead of full of deprivation, sacrifice, hustle, and perfection.
Yes, to all of that. You mentioned before that you were talking about when people make choices starting with their values. So can you share with our listeners the values shakeup that happens when you master this psychological flexibility? And maybe I shouldn't say master because then that brings in perfection, but when you get better at the psychological flexibility for midlife, especially.
Yes. Well, I love that you said that because people tend to couple perfection with mastery, but it is mastery. And the value shakeups that happen is, so if we go to those three beliefs, the first, you start to value rest, right? And we know there's seven different types of rest. And so it's like, there's, you know, you start to physical, emotional, creative, spiritual, I'm forgetting some of the other ones, but really valuing rest is not something I think we needed to value in our 20s or 30s. I mean, ideally we would have, but you can't push yourself in the same way, right? And so your idea of what makes a fulfilling life for my clients, it's really like, oh, my ambition has shifted. Is that wrong? I don't want to work as much. I don't, like, what does that mean for me? And it's like, oh, there's this opening to value rest. And it doesn't, and I have them, I encourage them to focus on like impact instead of just busy and productivity. So it doesn't mean that you're not in the workforce, you're not contributing. It just means like you've had all these decades of experience. Like, what's yours to do and what's not? Right. And as we value rest, I think that's a question that comes up if we're going to value rest. Right.
Okay. And is there anything else you want to say about the values shakeup that happens there? Or is it mostly about bringing in more rest and focusing on impact, like versus like as busy as I am, that means I'm productive, which means I'm tying my value to being productive. Right.
Yeah, yeah. There's two other big ones, I think, that go with each of the beliefs. Because once we stop believing these things in such extremes, other values. So I think one of the things that when we stop valuing perfection, we start trusting that we can figure things out and get creative. And so what we start wanting to do is take more risks because we learn how to take risks, right? Again, I view perfectionism as there's no risk. If I follow this plan, it's going to work. Instead of being like, you know, oh, like your client, I can get burpees in here. That's creative, flexible thinking, right? Instead of thinking like, I have to sweat, I have to have workout gear on, you know, like we have all of these, like we build stuff up when we're in that perfection like perfection, no risk. So we start to want to take more risks, I think, if we can master what happens when things are imperfect, because we get more creative and we trust ourselves to figure out. And then I think the last value shakeup is the one around sacrifice and reward. So many clients of mine are worried about looking like a burden or looking like they're high maintenance, and starting to realize that their needs and other people's needs can get met. That like there's this real win-win synergy, and like, oh my God, why didn't I know this all along? Like my life is so much easier and it's so much more richer when we can have the kind of conversations of like, you know, that doesn't work for me right now. Or yes, I do want to do that. Or, you know, really getting clear on our needs and realizing that they aren't in opposition to the people that we love. So we can look at like, hey, I was going to the gym in the morning, right? It was like, I needed a break from my son, right? The baby years were really hard for me. But, and again, my husband was here. He wasn't left alone. But it was like, a part of why I needed to get to the gym was because my temper is that when I was going through that last year of perimenopause, I just had so much anger and rage. And I needed to go to the gym so I could be really present and compassionate and hold his big emotions, you know, because I was like, helping him build his nervous system those years. So it was a win-win because I wasn't measuring how many hours and how busy I was with him, but I was measuring the kind of impact I wanted to be as a parent. And so realizing our needs aren't, sometimes his needs trump mine, and that's okay, they need to, but it's not all the time. But I can be more flexible with when isn't it, you know, and that's just one example. I mean, we can also think about our partners, our friends, our work, you know.
I love this because one of the questions I often ask my guests is around the fact that I encourage my clients to remember that when a woman puts herself first, everyone around her benefits. And I often share that there's this study that was done where they took a group of women and they asked them to rank five things in terms of priority. And it was their children, their pets, their elderly parents, their spouse, and then themselves. So. Wow. What you're saying here and being flexible and having your needs and other people's needs met, they do not have to be one or the other. They are both equally valuable. And I love that so much. So is there anything else that you would pass on as advice or words of wisdom for women that especially kind of get caught up in this, this idea that their worth is based on taking care of others and they forget about themselves?
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, realizing that caretaking is beautiful, it's undervalued, and it's wonderful to want to care about other people. So I just want to say, because sometimes in the coaching world, it's like, put yourself first and all this stuff. And it's like, no, it's wonderful to be a caretaker. Our society doesn't value it, but it is basically required for any functioning culture, right? So I want to say, I think it's beautiful that we've all done that all these years. And then the second thing is, I want to say, it makes sense that it's hard to break this. Because again, especially as women, we're told the way that you get recognized with no risk, no judgment, no anything, is to put everyone else first. That's how you stay safe. Right? That is, you're going to get the recognition. You're going to feel like you matter without any of the risk. So understand that I'm always telling my clients, your bad habits, the resistance to change, it all makes sense. It all makes sense because this is what we've been rewarded for. And I think nature, with our drop in estrogen, which makes us care so much about other people, nature's saying, all right, pushing you out of the nest. You don't have the estrogen, that does influence your psychology. Doesn't mean you tell everyone to F off, and it's your time. Like, you have to be a little bit more quote unquote selfish, because we need you out in the world sharing everything that you've done. However, it does make sense that it can be hard, and you can get recognized and not be judged, including for having needs. So you can have it all in that category. And oh, some God. People may judge, but that's okay. They may not be for you anymore.
Well, and the cool part about estrogen dropping is we care less too.
That's what I was saying. Okay. Thanks for making that connection in case people didn't know that. Yeah. Estrogen makes you care a lot less what other people think.
Yeah.
And oh, I, t- I do want to say, because a lot of my clients are caught up in this all or nothing. They think like, it means like if they, I think sometimes people are afraid of like, oh, if I start just taking care of myself, I'm never going to care about anyone again. And that's just not true. Mm. Like that is not true. My clients tend to be so sensitive, care, like, you know, they're doctors, they're therapists, they're trainers, they're other coaches. They are the caring people of the world. So that's not going to happen either. I promise. Yeah. You may need to go to the other extreme for like a little bit, but you'll come back around.
Well, it's just like such a neat thing to be reminded that we're so pushed towards wanting things to be perfect, that if we think we take a step towards taking care of ourselves, that we have to do that perfectly at the expense of everyone around us.
Yes. No, because we need each other. Like, we need belonging. So this is about having deeper relationships, not necessarily less of them. It's actually about enriching your relationships so that people can actually be in relationship with you, which includes your needs.
Yes. I love it. I love everything that we've talked about today. Thank you so much for all of these details. You have something to offer to my listeners, and it is a comfort eating quiz. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where we can go to find it?
Yeah. So whenever we have specific, whatever our eating triggers are, we go into these protection strategies, and they're rooted in the three beliefs we talked about today. And so what you can do is take the quiz to see what protection strategy tends to be dominant for you. And then it can give you some questions to start asking yourself so you can tune into your needs rather than just working harder, trying to be perfect and trying to please everybody.
Awesome. Amazing. Okay. And the place for us to go and find that is at your website?
Yeah. AllieShapiro.com/comfort-eating-quiz.
Amazing.
How's that for clarity?
I will include that in the show notes for anyone who's interested in that. And then I'm sure that there are people who are listening who just find you delightful and they want to come and say hi or learn how they can work with you. How can we direct them to where they can find you?
Yeah. My website, AllieShapiro.com, has a work with me. There's some free, there's a free Truce with Food mini course, some journal prompts. I have my Insatiable podcast. And then I am on Instagram at Allie, A-L-I-M Shapiro, S-H-A-P-I-R-O. I'm there as well.
Amazing. Any final words of wisdom that you want to share, or the one thing that our listeners should take away from this today?
Yeah. I just think the one thing is realizing that, yes, I love your quote, Paige, consistency matters. And it's all about maintaining momentum to get there, not being perfect.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Allie. It was so fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Peggy, for having me.
And that's it for this episode of the Midlife Improvement Project. Thank you so much to my guest today, Allie Shapiro, for sharing her story and her expertise. I hope that it will help you to achieve sustainable change when it comes to your health and wellness habits. Are you curious about what it might be like to work with me as your coach? Why not sign up for a complimentary chat with me at drpeggymalone.com/coach? There really are no strings attached. And even if you decide not to hire me, you'll come away from that call with some strategies to help you move forward with your goals for 2024. I look forward to talking to you. Also, I'd love it if you would come and say hi on Instagram. You can find me there at Dr. Peggy Malone, and that is where you'll find me discussing my life as a 50-year-old who likes to snowboard, back handspring, and also to encourage women like you to find what is fun and adventurous for you in midlife. As usual, you'll find all of the resources and links that were mentioned during today's show in the show notes at drpeggymalone.com/podcast. If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to ever miss an episode, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen. And if you were listening today and you thought to yourself, I know somebody that should probably listen to this, why not share it with them? Until next time, my friends, stay focused and get after it.